is the same as it is for singleton moms. Once you're fully dilated, delivery of baby A may be a cinch, 3 pushes, or a protracted ordeal, 3 hours. Though that latter scenario is far from a given, some research has shown that the duration of pushing is usually longer in a twin delivery than in a singleton delivery. The second twin in a vaginal delivery usually comes within 10 to 30 minutes of the first, and most multiples moms report that delivering baby B is a snap compared with baby A. Depending on the position of baby B, he or she may need some help from the practitioner, who can try external or internal version to move baby into the birth canal or use vacuum extraction to speed the delivery. Mixed delivery. In rare, very rare cases, baby B must be delivered by C-section after baby A has been delivered vaginally. This is usually only done when an emergency situation has come up that puts baby B at risk, such as placental abruption or cord prolapse. Those all-important fetal monitors tell your doctor just how well baby B is doing after baby A's arrival. A mixed delivery is definitely not fun for mom. In the moment, of course, it can be very scary. And after the babies are born, it means recovery from both a vaginal birth and a surgical one. A big double ouch. But when it's necessary, it can be a baby-saving procedure. Well worth the added recovery time. Planned cesarean delivery. Possible reasons for this plan include a previous C-section, a VBAC or vaginal birth after cesarean, is not common practice for multiples, placenta previa or other complications, or fetal positions that make vaginal delivery unsafe. With most planned C-sections, your coach can accompany you into the OR, where you will probably be given an epidural or a spinal block. You may be surprised how fast it all goes after you're numb. Baby A's and baby B's birth times will be separated by anywhere from seconds to just a minute or two. Hoping to hold and breastfeed your babies as soon as possible after delivery, so-called gentle cesarean deliveries are also an option for twins, assuming all is going well. Unplanned cesarean delivery. An unplanned C-section is the other possible way your babies might enter the world. In this case, you may walk into your usual weekly prenatal appointment and find out that you're going to meet your babies the same day. Best to be prepared, so in those later weeks of pregnancy, be sure to get your bag packed and ready to go. Reasons for a surprise cesarean delivery include conditions such as intrauterine growth restriction, where the babies run out of room to grow, or a sharp rise in your blood pressure, preeclampsia. An unplanned C-section scenario may also arise during labor if there are any signs of distress in the babies, or if you labor for a very long time and don't progress at all. A uterus holding 10 or more pounds of babies may be too stretched to contract effectively, so a cesarean delivery might be the only way out.
Position, position, position. Quick, flip a coin. Heads up or tails down, or maybe one or more of each. How multiples will end up at delivery time and how you'll end up delivering is anybody's guess. Here's a look at the possible ways your twins may be presenting and the likely delivery scenarios for each situation. Vertex, vertex. This is the most cooperative position that twins can wind up in on delivery day, and they wind up in it about 40% of the time. If both your babies are vertex, heads down, you'll likely be able to go into labor naturally and attempt a vaginal birth. Keep in mind, however, that even perfectly positioned singletons sometimes need to be delivered by C-section. This goes double for twins. If you're hoping to have a midwife attend your delivery, or even if you'd like to deliver at home, the vertex-vertex position is the best-case scenario. Vertex breech. The second best case scenario, if you're hoping for a vaginal birth for your twins, is the vertex breech setup. This means that if baby A is head down and well positioned for delivery, it may be possible for your practitioner to manipulate baby B from the breech position to vertex after baby A is born. This can be done either by applying manual pressure to your abdomen, external version, or literally reaching inside your uterus to turn baby B. Internal version. The internal version sounds much more complicated than it is because baby A has essentially warmed up and stretched out the birth canal already. The procedure is over with pretty quickly. Still, an arm reaching into your uterus to pull out a baby isn't pretty without pain meds. Another reason why many doctors strongly recommend epidurals for multiple moms. If baby B remains stubbornly breech, your practitioner may do a breech extraction in which your baby is pulled feet first right out the exit. Breech vertex or breech breech. If baby A is breech or if both your babies are bottoms down, your practitioner will almost certainly recommend a C-section. Though external version is commonplace for breech singletons and can work in the above-mentioned vertex breech multiple pregnancy, it's considered too risky in this scenario. Baby A oblique. Who knew there were so many positions for babies to lie in? When baby A is oblique, it means his or her head is pointed down, but toward either of your hips rather than squarely at your cervix. In a singleton pregnancy with oblique presentation, a practitioner would probably try external version to bring the baby's head where it needs to be, facing the exit. But that's risky with twins. In this case, two things can happen. An oblique presentation can correct itself as contractions progress, resulting in a vaginal birth, or more likely, your practitioner will recommend a C-section to avoid a long, drawn-out labor that may or may not lead to a vaginal birth. Transverse-transverse. In this setup, both babies are lying horizontally across your uterus. A double transverse almost always results in a C-section. Got triplets or more in there? Your babies can assume any number of these positions, and maybe even keep you guessing until right up to delivery.
Delivering triplets or more. Wondering if your higher-order multiples are destined to take the abdominal route out? A cesarean delivery is most often scheduled for triplets and quads, not only because it's usually safest, but because C-sections are more common in high-risk deliveries, a category higher-order multiples always fall into, and because they're more common among older moms who give birth to the majority of triplets and quads. But some doctors say the vaginal delivery can be an option if baby A, the one nearest the exit, is in a heads-down presentation, and there are no other complicating factors, such as preeclampsia in the mom or fetal distress in one or more of the babies. In some rare cases, the first baby or the first and second may be delivered vaginally, and the final baby or babies may require a cesarean delivery. Of course, more important than having all of your babies exit vaginally is having all of you leaving the delivery room in good condition, and any route to that outcome will be a successful one.
Multiple recovery. Besides having your hands, and if you're nursing, your breasts, twice as busy, your recovery from a multiple delivery will be very similar to that of a singleton delivery. You can also expect these postpartum differences. You'll be going more with the flow. Your lochia, after delivery bleeding, may be heavier and last longer. That's because more blood was stored up in your uterus during your pregnancy, and it all has to go now. After pains may be more of a pain. Your uterus was extra stretched by your multiple load, so it'll take more contracting to get it back to size, and those contractions may be extra painful. Your back won't catch a break. All the extra weight you carried around weakened your abs, which means they won't be as supportive of your poor aching back, at least not until they tighten back up. Extra loosened ligaments pose the same painful problem. In the meantime, a belly band can pick up some of the slack. Your tummy will take extra time. A belly that took one, actually two or more, for the team, generously providing room and board for multiple babies, will take longer to return to its normal size, and that's to be expected. In its way, your still extra enlarged uterus, the extra fluids that will need to be flushed out, the extra fat reserves your body produced for your babies, and the extra loose skin you're in. Give it, and yourself, time. Your recovery will be slower. In general, having just run a double or triple baby marathon will leave you lagging for longer. Especially if you were on bed rest or otherwise restricted in activity, you'll need to slowly build up your strength and stamina. Part 3. After the baby is born. Chapter 16. Postpartum, the first week.
Congratulations. The moment you've been awaiting for 40 or so weeks has finally arrived. You've put long months of pregnancy and long hours of childbirth behind you, and you're officially a mother with a new bundle of joy in your arms instead of in your belly. But the transition from pregnancy to postpartum comes with more than just a baby. None of it is nearly as cute. It also comes with a variety of new symptoms. Goodbye pregnancy aches and pains, hello postpartum ones, and a variety of new questions. Why am I sweating so much? Why am I having contractions if I've already delivered? Will I ever be able to sit again? Why do I still look 6 months pregnant? Whose breasts are these anyway? Hopefully, you'll have a chance to learn about these and many more pertinent postpartum topics in advance. Once you're on full-time mom duty, finding the time to read anything, never mind finding the time to use the toilet or take a shower, won't be easy. If you'd like to see any of the illustrations from this chapter, you can download and print out a special PDF from the same Audible page where you purchase your audiobook.
What you may be feeling the first week after birth.
During the first week postpartum, depending on the type of delivery you had, easy or difficult, vaginal or cesarean, you may experience all or only some of the following. Physically, vaginal bleeding, lochia, similar to but possibly heavier than your period. Abdominal cramps, after pains, as your uterus contracts, especially when you're nursing. Exhaustion. Perineal discomfort, pain, numbness if you had a vaginal delivery, especially if you had stitches. Some perineal discomfort if you had a C-section, especially if you labored first. Pain around the incision and later on, numbness in the area if you had a C-section, especially a first one. Discomfort sitting and walking if you had a repair of a tear, an episiotomy, or a C-section. Difficulty urinating for a day or two. Constipation and a lot of discomfort with bowel movements. Hemorrhoids continued from pregnancy and or new from pushing. All over achiness, especially if you did a lot of pushing. Bloodshot eyes and or black and blue marks around the eyes, on cheeks, elsewhere from pushing. Sweating, particularly at night. Hot flashes. Swelling in your feet, ankles, legs, and hands continued from pregnancy, plus possibly extra from any IV fluids. Breast discomfort and engorgement beginning around the third or fourth day postpartum. Sore or cracked nipples if you're breastfeeding. Stretch marks, possibly including ones you never noticed before. Emotionally, elation, blues, or swings between the two. New mom jitters, trepidation about caring for your new baby, especially if you're a first-timer. Excitement about starting your new life with your new baby. A feeling of being overwhelmed by the challenges now and ahead. Frustration if you're having a hard time getting started breastfeeding.
What you may be wondering about the first week after birth.
Bleeding.
I expected some bleeding after delivery, but when I got out of bed for the first time and saw the blood running down my legs, I was a little freaked out.
Grab a pile of pads and relax. This discharge of leftover blood, mucus, and tissue from your uterus, known as lochia, is normally as heavy as and often heavier than a menstrual period for the first 3 to 10 postpartum days. It may total up to 2 cups before it begins to taper off, not that you'll be measuring it, and at times it may seem pretty profuse. A sudden gush when you stand up in the first few days is normal. It's just the flow that accumulates when you've been lying down or sitting. Because blood and an occasional blood clot are the predominant ingredients of lochia during the immediate postpartum period, your discharge can be quite red for anywhere from 5 days to 3 weeks, gradually turning to a watery pink, then to brown, and finally to a yellowish white. Maxi pads, not tampons, should be used to absorb the flow, which may continue on and off for just a couple of weeks or for as long as 6 weeks. In some moms, light bleeding continues for as long as 3 months. The flow is different for everyone. Breastfeeding and/or Pitocin, which is routinely ordered by some practitioners, either via IV or a shot after delivery, may reduce the flow of Logia by encouraging uterine contractions. These post-delivery contractions, aka after pains, help shrink the uterus back to its normal size more quickly while pinching off exposed blood vessels at the site where the placenta separated from the uterus. If you're in the hospital or birthing center and you think your bleeding may be excessive, let a nurse know. Once you're home, if you experience what seems to be abnormally heavy bleeding, call your practitioner without delay. If you can't reach him or her, go to the ER in the hospital where you delivered if possible. Call your practitioner too if you notice no bleeding at all once you get home.
Puff Mama Part 2. No longer pregnant, but still plenty puffy, or maybe even more puffy? Extra fluids accumulate during pregnancy, of course, but IV fluids during labor and delivery pump in even more. So if you had an IV, you can expect to experience additional swelling in your legs and ankles, and maybe your hands and face, too, afterward. It will take time to drain those accumulated fluids, but you can help speed up the process by circling your ankles, make 10 circles clockwise, then 10 counterclockwise, getting up and moving around as soon as you're able, and drinking lots of water to flush your system.
After pains.
I've been having crampy pains in my abdomen, especially when I'm nursing. What's that about?
Thought you'd felt the last of those contractions. Unfortunately, they don't end immediately with delivery, and neither does the discomfort, okay, pain that they cause. Those so-called after pains are triggered by the contractions of the uterus as it shrinks from about 2 1/3 pounds to just a couple of ounces and makes its normal descent back into the pelvis following delivery. You can keep track of the shrinking size of your uterus by pressing lightly below your navel. By the end of 6 weeks, you probably won't feel it at all. After pains can definitely be a pain, but they do important work. Besides helping the uterus find its way back to its usual size and location, those contractions help slow normal postpartum bleeding. They're likely to be more of a pain in women whose uterine muscles are lacking in tone because of previous births or excessive stretching, as with a multiple pregnancy. After pains can be much more intense during nursing, when contraction-stimulating oxytocin is released. A good thing, actually, since it means your uterus is shrinking faster, and or if you had Pitocin following delivery. The pain should ease naturally within 4 to 7 days. In the meantime, the good news is now that you've delivered, you can turn once again to ibuprofen, Advil, or Motrin for its more potent pain relief, though acetaminophen, Tylenol, should do the trick too. If pain relievers don't work or if the pains persist for more than a week, see your practitioner to rule out other postpartum problems, including infection. Perineal pain.
I didn't have an episiotomy and I didn't tear. Why am I so sore down there?
You can't expect 7 or 8 pounds of baby to pass unnoticed. Even if your perineum was left neatly intact during delivery, that area has still been stretched, bruised, and generally traumatized, and discomfort ranging from mild to not so mild is the very normal result. The pain may be worse when you cough or sneeze, and you may even find that it hurts to sit down. You can try the same tips given in the next answer for post-tear pain. It's also possible that in pushing your baby out, you developed hemorrhoids and possibly anal fissures, which can range from uncomfortable to extremely painful. Or perhaps a vulvar or vaginal varicose vein that cropped up during pregnancy was further irritated during pushing and delivery, causing even more pain now. Fortunately, these types of varicose veins usually disappear a few weeks after delivery, and in the very unlikely event that they don't disappear after a few months, your doctor can easily treat and remove them.
I tore, and now I'm incredibly sore. Could my stitches be infected?
Everyone who delivers vaginally, and sometimes those who have a lengthy labor before delivering via cesarean, can expect some perineal pain. But not surprisingly, that pain's likely to be compounded if the perineum was torn or surgically cut, aka an episiotomy. Like any freshly repaired wound, the site of a tear or episiotomy will take time to heal, usually 7 to 10 days. Pain alone during this time, unless it is very severe, is not a sign that you've developed an infection. What's more, infection, though possible, is really very unlikely if you've been taking good care of the area. While you're in the hospital or birthing center, a nurse will check your perineum at least once daily for any signs of infection, like inflammation. The nurse will also instruct you in postpartum perineal hygiene, which is important in preventing infection, not only of the repair site, but of the genital tract as well. Germs can get around. For this reason, the same precautions apply for moms who delivered completely intact. Here's the self-care plan for a healthy postpartum perineum. Use a fresh maxi pad as needed, but at least every 4 to 6 hours. Pour or squirt warm water or an antiseptic solution, if one was recommended by your practitioner or nurse, over your perineum while you pee to ease burning, and after you've finished peeing to keep the area clean. Pat dry, make sure your hands are clean, with gauze pads or with the paper wipes that come with some hospital-provided pads. Always from front to back. Gently does it, no rubbing. Keep your hands off the area until healing is complete. Though discomfort is likely to be greater if you've had a repair, with itchiness around the stitches possibly accompanying soreness, the tips below will be soothing no matter how you delivered. To relieve perineal pain, ice it. To reduce swelling and bring soothing relief, use chilled witch hazel pads, an ice pack or disposable glove filled with crushed ice, a maxi pad with a built-in cold pack, or compression shorts with a built-in ice pack. Apply to the site every couple of hours during the first 24 hours following delivery. Heat it. Warm compresses or warm sitz baths, a bath in which only your hips and bottom are submerged, for 20 minutes a few times a day will ease discomfort. Ask if you can add Epsom salts, witch hazel, lavender oil, or chamomile oil for extra relief. Numb it. Use local anesthetics in the form of sprays, creams, ointments, or pads recommended by your practitioner. Taking ibuprofen, Advil or Motrin, or acetaminophen, Tylenol, may also help. Keep off it. To keep the pressure off your sore perineum, lie on your side when possible and avoid long periods of standing or sitting. Sitting on a pillow, especially one with an opening in the center like a boppy, or an inflated or memory foam donut cushion, can help. You can also try tightening your buttocks before sitting down. Keep it loose. Tight clothing can rub and irritate the area, plus slow the healing. Let your perineum breathe as much as possible. For now, favor baggy sweats over spandex leggings. Exercise it. Kegel exercises done as frequently as possible after delivery and right through the postpartum period will stimulate circulation to the area, promoting healing and improving muscle tone. Don't worry if you can't feel yourself doing the Kegels, since initially the area will be numb. Feeling will return to the perineum gradually over the next few weeks, and in the meantime, the work's being done even if you can't feel it. If your perineum becomes very red, very painful, and swollen, or if you detect an unpleasant odor, you may have developed an infection. Call your practitioner.
Welcome back, ibuprofen. Have you been missing your old buddy ibuprofen, Advil, Motrin, during pregnancy? Once you've delivered, and unless your practitioner has advised otherwise, it's safe to pull ibuprofen out of the medicine cabinet again and enjoy its more potent pain relief for all your postpartum discomforts. It's also breastfeeding friendly.
Delivery bruises.
I look more like I've been in a boxing ring than in a birthing room. How come?
Look and feel like you've taken a beating. That's normal postpartum. After all, you've probably worked harder birthing your child than most boxers work in the ring, even though you were facing only a 7 or 8 pounder. Thanks to powerful contractions and strenuous pushing, especially if you were pushing with your face and chest instead of your lower body, you might be sporting a variety of unwelcome delivery souvenirs. These may include black or bloodshot eyes, cold compresses for 10 minutes several times a day may help speed healing, and bruises ranging from tiny dots on the cheeks to larger black and blue marks on the face or upper chest area. You may also be bringing home soreness in your chest and or difficulty taking a deep breath because of strained chest muscles. Hot baths, showers, or a heating pad may ease it. Pain and tenderness in the area of your tailbone, heat and massage may help, and or general all-over achiness. Again, heat where it hurts may help.
When to call your practitioner. Few moms feel their physical or emotional best after delivering a baby. That's just par for postpartum. Especially in the first 6 weeks after delivery, experiencing a variety of aches, pains, and other uncomfortable or unpleasant symptoms is common. Fortunately, what isn't common is having a serious complication. Still, it's smart to be in the know. That's why all brand new moms should be aware of symptoms that might point to a postpartum problem, just in case. Call your practitioner without delay if you experience any of the following: bleeding that saturates more than one pad an hour for more than a few hours. If you can't reach your practitioner immediately, call the ER or the labor and delivery unit at the hospital you delivered at. Have the triage nurse assess you over the phone and advise you on whether or not you should come into the ER. Large amounts, bright red bleeding that occur 1 to 2 weeks after delivery, called delayed or secondary postpartum hemorrhage. But don't worry about light menstrual-like bleeding for up to 6 weeks, in some women as long as 3 months, or a flow that increases when you're active or during breastfeeding. Bleeding that has a foul odor, it should smell like your period. Numerous or large, lemon size or larger, clots in the vaginal bleeding. Occasional small clots in the first few days, however, are normal. A complete absence of bleeding during the first few postpartum days. Pain or discomfort, with or without swelling, in the lower abdominal area beyond the first few days after delivery. Persistent pain in the perineal area beyond the first few days, especially if it doesn't respond to pain relievers. After the first 24 hours, a temperature of over 100 degrees Fahrenheit for more than a day. Severe dizziness or significant lightheadedness when standing up. Nausea and vomiting. Severe headaches that persist for more than a few minutes. Localized pain, swelling, redness, heat, and tenderness in a breast once engorgement has subsided, which could be signs of mastitis or breast infection. Localized swelling and or redness, heat, and oozing at the site of a C-section incision. After the first 24 hours, difficulty urinating, excessive pain or burning when urinating, and or a frequent urge to urinate that yields scanty and or dark urine. Drink plenty of water while trying to reach your practitioner. Sharp chest pain, not chest achiness, which is usually the result of strenuous pushing. Rapid breath or heartbeat, blueness of fingertips or lips. Localized pain, tenderness, and warmth in your calf or thigh, with or without redness, swelling, and pain when you flex your foot. Rest with your leg elevated while you try to reach your practitioner. Don't massage the leg or the tender area. Depression or anxiety that affects your ability to cope. Feelings of anger toward your baby, particularly if those feelings are accompanied by violent urges.
Difficulty urinating.
It's been a few hours since I gave birth, and I haven't been able to pee.
Peeing doesn't come easily for most brand new moms during the first 24 postpartum hours. Some feel no urge at all, and others feel the urge but are unable to satisfy it. Still others manage to pee but with pain and burning. There are a host of reasons why basic bladder function often becomes too much like hard work after delivery. The holding capacity of the bladder increases because it suddenly has more room to expand, so your need to pee may be less frequent than it was during pregnancy. The bladder may have been traumatized or bruised during delivery. temporarily paralyzed, it might not send the necessary signals of urgency, even when it's full. Having had an epidural and or a catheter may decrease the sensitivity of the bladder or your alertness to its signals. Perineal pain may cause reflex spasms in the urethra, making urination more difficult. Swelling of the perineum may also stand between you and an easy pee. The sensitivity of the site of a tear or episiotomy repair can cause burning and or pain with urination. Burning may be eased somewhat by standing astride the toilet while peeing so the flow comes straight down without touching sore spots. Squirting warm water on the area while you pee can also decrease discomfort. Use the squirt bottle you were probably given and shown how to use. You may be dehydrated, especially if you didn't do any drinking during labor and didn't receive IV fluids. Any number of psychological factors may keep you from going with the flow. Fear of pain, lack of privacy, embarrassment over using a bedpan, or needing help at the toilet. As difficult as peeing may be, it's essential that you empty your bladder within 6 to 8 hours after delivery or after the removal of any catheter to avoid a UTI, loss of muscle tone in the bladder from over-distension, and excessive bleeding, because an overfull bladder can get in the way of your uterus as it attempts the normal postpartum contractions that staunch bleeding. With those marching orders in mind, the nurse will ask you frequently after delivery if you've accomplished this important goal. You might even be asked to deposit that first postpartum pee into a container or bedpan so your output can be measured. The nurse may palpate your bladder to make sure it's not distended. To help get things flowing, be sure you're drinking plenty of fluids. What goes in is more likely to go out. Take a walk. Getting out of bed and going for a slow stroll as soon after delivery as you're able will help get your bladder and your bowels moving. If you're uncomfortable with an audience, and who isn't, have the nurse wait outside while you pee. If you have to use a bedpan, try to sit on it instead of lying on it. Squirt warm water over your perineal area to induce urgency. You can also try warming your perineum in a sitz bath or chilling it with an ice pack. Turn the water on while you try. Running water in the sink really does encourage your own faucet to flow. If all efforts fail and you haven't peed within 8 hours after delivery, your practitioner may order a catheter to empty your bladder, another good reason to try the previous methods. After 24 hours, the problem of too little generally becomes one of too much. Most new moms usually begin urinating frequently and plentifully as the excess fluids of pregnancy are excreted. If you're still having trouble peeing or if output is scant during the next few days, it's possible you have a UTI.
I can't seem to control my urine. It just leaks out.
The physical stress of childbirth can put a lot of things temporarily out of commission, including the bladder. Either it can't let go of the urine, or it lets go of it too easily, as in your drippy case. Such leakage, called urinary incontinence, occurs because of loss of muscle tone in the perineal area. Kegel exercises can help restore the tone and help you regain control over the flow of urine. That first bowel movement.
I delivered 2 days ago, and I haven't had a bowel movement. I've felt the urge, but I've been too afraid of opening my stitches to try.
The passing of the first postpartum poop is a milestone every newly delivered mom is eager to put behind her, so to speak. And the longer it takes you to get past that milestone, the more anxious and the more uncomfortable you're likely to become. Several physical factors may interfere with the return of bowel business as usual after delivery. For one thing, the abdominal muscles that assist in elimination have been stretched during childbirth, making them flaccid and sometimes temporarily unable to help out. For another, the bowel itself may have taken a beating during delivery, leaving it sluggish. And of course, it may have been emptied before or during delivery. Remember that pre-labor diarrhea, the poop you squeezed out during pushing, and stayed pretty empty because you didn't eat much solid food during labor. But it's the psychological factors that most inhibit postpartum pooping. The fear that it will hurt, split open any stitches, or make your hemorrhoids worse. The natural embarrassment over lack of privacy in the hospital or birthing center, and that pressure to perform. In other words, it's mind over fecal matter. Here are some steps you can take to get things moving again. Don't worry. Nothing will keep you from moving your bowels more than worrying about moving your bowels. Don't stress about opening the stitches. You won't. Finally, don't worry if it takes a few days to get things moving. That's okay, too. Request roughage. If you're still in the hospital or birthing center, select as many whole grains, bran cereal or muffins, beans and fresh fruits, but not bananas, and salads from the menu as you can. If you're home, make sure you're eating regularly and well, and that you're getting your fill of fiber. As much as you can, stay away from bowel-clogging foods like white bread and rice. Keep the liquids coming. Not only do you need to compensate for fluids you lost during labor and delivery, but you need to take in additional liquids to help soften stool if you're clogged up. Water's always a winner, but you may also find apple or prune juice especially effective. Hot water with lemon can also do the trick. Get off your bottom. An inactive body encourages inactive bowels. You won't be running laps a day after delivery, but you will be able to take short strolls up and down the halls. Kegel exercises, which can be practiced in bed almost immediately after delivery, will help tone up not only the perineum, but also the rectum. At home, take walks with baby. Don't strain. Straining won't break open any stitches you have, but it can lead to or aggravate hemorrhoids. If you already have hemorrhoids, you may find relief with sitz baths, topical anesthetics, witch hazel pads, suppositories, or hot or cold compresses. Use stool softeners. Many hospitals send new moms home with both a stool softener and a laxative for a reason. Both can help get you going. The first few poops may be a pain to pass, but fear not. As stools soften and you become more regular, discomfort will ease and eventually end, and moving your bowels will become second nature once again.
Should I stay or should I go? Wondering when you'll be able to bring baby home? How long you and your baby stay in the hospital will depend on the kind of delivery you had, your condition, and your baby's condition. By federal law, you have the right to expect your insurer to pay for a 48-hour stay following a normal vaginal delivery and 96 hours following a cesarean delivery. If both you and your baby are in fine shape and you're eager to get home, you'll likely be able to go home 24 hours after your vaginal delivery and 2 to 3 days after your cesarean delivery, or earlier if your practitioner gives you the early green light. If you do opt for an early checkout, keep in mind that your baby will need an early checkup too, just to make sure no problems crop up after discharge. The most convenient option is a home nurse visit, since you won't have to venture out to get your baby checked out. Your insurance plan may pay for a home nurse visit, and all first-time, low-income moms are eligible for one through the Affordable Care Act's Maternal, Infant, and Early Childhood Home Visiting Program. If a checkup at home isn't an option, make sure you take your newborn for an office visit to the pediatrician within a few days. The nurse or doctor will assess baby's weight and general condition, including a check for jaundice, as well as evaluate how feeding is going. Keeping and bringing along a feeding diary and a wet and dirty diaper count will help. If you do stay the full 48 or 96 hours, take advantage of the opportunity to rest as much as possible. You'll need that energy stash for when you get home.
Excessive sweating and hot flashes.
I've been waking up at night soaked with sweat. Is this normal?
It's messy, but it's normal. New moms are sweaty moms and sometimes moms with hot flashes, and for a couple of good reasons. For one thing, your hormone levels are dropping, reflecting the fact that you're no longer pregnant. For another, perspiration, like frequent urination, is your body's way of ridding itself of pregnancy-accumulated fluids, as well as any IV-accumulated fluids, after delivery. Something you're bound to be happy about. Something you may not be happy with is how uncomfortable that perspiration might make you and how long it might continue. Some women keep sweating up a storm for several weeks or more. If you do most of your sweating at night, as most new moms do, covering your pillow with an absorbent towel may help you sleep better. It'll also help protect your pillow. Don't sweat the sweat. Do make sure, though, that you're drinking enough fluids to compensate for the ones you're losing, especially if you're breastfeeding, but even if you're not. Hot flashes are common postpartum, too, also because of those hormonal changes. These "is it hot in here or is it me" moments may be more pronounced if you're breastfeeding and may last a few weeks or more. But while they may be a preview of menopause, they're not a sign of it. Fever.
I've just come home from the hospital and I'm running a fever of about 101 Fahrenheit. Should I call my doctor?
Just as it was during your 9 months of pregnancy, it's always a good idea to play it safe during the weeks after delivery. And that means keeping your practitioner in the loop when you're not feeling well. Although it's always possible that the fever you're running isn't postpartum related, your practitioner will want to rule out a postpartum infection and treat any infection that's getting you down. While fever can also occasionally be caused by the combination of excitement and exhaustion that's common in the early postpartum period, it typically wouldn't run as high as 101. A brief low-grade fever, less than 100 degrees, occasionally accompanies engorgement when your milk first comes in, and it's nothing to worry about. So keep playing it safe postpartum. Report to your practitioner any fever over 100 degrees that lasts more than a day during the first 3 postpartum weeks, or lasts more than a few hours if it's a higher fever. Engorged breasts.
My milk just came in, and now my breasts are gigantic, rock hard, and so painful I can't put on a bra.
Just when you thought your breasts couldn't get any bigger, they do. That first milk delivery arrives, leaving your breasts swollen, painfully tender, throbbing, granite hard, and sometimes seriously, frighteningly gigantic. To make matters more uncomfortable and inconvenient, this engorgement, which can extend all the way to the armpits, can make nursing painful for you, and if your nipples are flattened by the swelling, frustrating for baby. The longer it takes for you and baby to hook up for your first nursing sessions, the worse engorgement is likely to be. Happily, though, it won't last long. Engorgement and all its miserable effects gradually eases once a well-coordinated milk supply and demand system is established. Typically within days. Nipple soreness too, which usually peaks at about the 20th feeding, if you're keeping count, generally diminishes rapidly as the nipples toughen up. And with proper care, so does the nipple cracking and bleeding some women also experience. See what to expect the first year for more. Until nursing becomes second nature for your breasts and completely painless for you, there are some steps you can take to relieve the discomfort and get a good milk supply going. Women who have an easy time getting started with breastfeeding, especially second-timers, may not experience very much engorgement at all. As long as baby's getting those milk deliveries, that's normal too. Engorgement if you're not breastfeeding.
I'm not nursing. I've heard that drying up the milk can be painful.
Your breasts are programmed to fill with milk around the 3rd or 4th postpartum day, whether you plan to use that milk to feed your baby or not. This engorgement can be uncomfortable, even painful, but it's only temporary. Milk is produced by your breasts only as needed. If the milk isn't used, production stops. Though sporadic leaking may continue for several days or even weeks, severe engorgement shouldn't last for more than 12 to 24 hours. During this time, ice packs, mild pain relievers, and a supportive bra may help. Avoid nipple stimulation, expressing milk, or hot showers, all of which can stimulate milk production and keep that painful cycle going longer. Where's the breast milk?
It's been hours since I delivered, and nothing comes out of my breasts when I squeeze them. Is my baby boy starving?
Not only is your baby not starving, he isn't even hungry yet. Babies aren't born with a big appetite or with immediate nutritional needs. And by the time your baby begins to hunger for a breastful of milk on the 3rd or 4th day postpartum, you'll undoubtedly be able to serve it up. Which isn't to say that your breasts are currently empty. Colostrum, which provides your baby with enough nourishment for now and with important antibodies his own body can't yet produce, and also helps empty baby's digestive system of excess mucus and bowels of meconium, is definitely present in the tiny amounts necessary. A teaspoon or so per feeding is all your bundle of joy needs at this point. But until the third or fourth postpartum day when your breasts are beginning to swell and feel full, indicating the milk has come in, it's not that easy to express by hand. A day-old baby, eager to suckle, is better equipped to extract this pre-milk than you are. If your milk doesn't come in at all by the time you've hit day four, call your practitioner.
Breast milk timeline. Suckling on colostrum for the first few days not only gets your newborn off to the healthiest start in life, but also gets the breastfeeding party started, stimulating production of the next stage of breast milk. Here's what'll be on tap for your baby in the coming weeks. Colostrum. You already have this thick, clearish yellow pre-milk at the ready as soon as your baby is born, providing your cuddly cutie with crucial antibodies and just the right kind of nourishment for the first few days of life. Transitional milk. Next up on the breast milk menu, transitional milk, which is what's filling your breasts and baby's tiny tummy during engorgement. It has a whitish-orange color and contains more lactose, fat, and calories than colostrum, while still providing a fair amount of those all-important immunoglobulins and proteins. Mature milk. Mature milk, which looks like watery skim milk, slightly tinged light blue, takes over from transitional milk around day 10 to 14 postpartum. Mature milk has two components to it, foremilk and hind milk. When your little one starts to suckle, the foremilk quenches baby's thirst, but not his or her appetite. As the nursing session progresses, your breast dispenses the hind milk, which is power-packed with the filling stuff, protein, fat, nutrients, and calories, everything your growing baby needs.
Bonding.
I expected to bond with my baby as soon as she was born, but I'm not feeling anything at all. Is something wrong with me?
Moments after delivery, you're handed your long-anticipated bundle of joy. And she's more beautiful and more perfect than you ever dared to imagine. She looks up at you, and your eyes lock in a heady gaze, forging an instant bond. As you cradle her tiny form, breathe in her sweetness, and cover her soft face with kisses, you feel emotions you never knew you had, and they overwhelm you with their intensity. You're a mom in love. And maybe you were dreaming, or at least pregnant daydreaming. Birthing room scenes like this one are the stuff dreams and commercials are made of, but they don't always play out. Another possible scenario? After a long, hard labor that's left you physically and emotionally drained, a wrinkled, puffy, red-faced stranger is placed in your awkward arms. And the first thing you notice is that she doesn't quite resemble the chubby-cheeked cherub you'd been expecting. The second thing you notice is that she doesn't stop crying. The third, that you have no idea how to make her stop crying. You try to feed her, but she won't latch on. You try to socialize with her, but she's more interested in sleeping. And frankly, at this point, so are you. And you can't help wondering, have I missed my opportunity to bond with my baby? Absolutely, positively not. The process of bonding is different for every parent and every baby, and it doesn't come with a use-by date. Sure, some moms bond quickly with their newborns, maybe because they've had experience with infants before. Their expectations are more realistic, their labors were easier, or their babies are more responsive. But other moms, plenty of them, find that the attachment doesn't cement with superglue speed. In fact, the bonds that last a lifetime generally form gradually, over time, and you and your baby have lots of that ahead of you. So give yourself that time, time to get used to being a mother. It's a major adjustment after all, and time to get to know your newborn, who, let's face it, is also a newcomer in your life. Meet your baby's basic needs and your own, and you'll find that love connection forming, a day and a cuddle at a time. And speaking of cuddles, bring them on. The more nurturing you do, especially skin to skin, since such snuggles release more of that nurturing hormone, oxytocin, the more like a nurturer you'll feel. Though it may not seem like it's coming naturally at first, the more time you spend cuddling, feeding, massaging, singing to, cooing to, and talking to your baby, the more time you spend skin to skin and face to face, the more natural it will start feeling, and the closer you'll become. Before you know it, you'll feel like the mom you are, really, bound forever to your baby by the kind of love you've dreamed of.
My baby was premature and was rushed to the NICU. The doctors say he'll be there for at least 2 weeks. Will it be too late for good bonding when he gets out?
Not at all. Sure, having a chance to bond right after birth, to make contact skin to skin, eye to eye, is wonderful. It's a first step in the development of a lasting parent-child connection. But it's only the first step, and this step doesn't have to take place at delivery. It can take place hours or days later in a hospital bed, or through the portals of an isolette, or even weeks later at home. And luckily, you'll be able to touch, talk to, and probably hold your baby, even while he's in the NICU. Most hospitals not only allow parent-infant contact in the NICU, but encourage it, especially kangaroo care, holding baby skin to skin against your chest. Talk to the NICU staff and see how you can get close to your newborn. For more on the care of premature babies, see what to expect the first year. Keep in mind, too, that even moms and dads who have a chance to bond in the birthing room don't necessarily feel that instant attachment. Love that lasts a lifetime takes time to develop, time that you and your baby will start having together soon.
For dads, bonding with baby. Bonding begins with that first cuddle, but it's just the very start of your relationship with your baby. That brand new connection between you will deepen and strengthen, not just over the next weeks, but over the many years you'll be sharing as father and child. In other words, don't expect instant results. You may get them, but no worries if you don't. Look at every moment with your newborn as a new opportunity to strengthen the bond you've been building. Every cuddle, every kiss, every bath, every gaze into those beautiful eyes, every word you speak or song you sing. Remember, your voice linked you together even before baby was born. You'll be bonding, making eye-to-eye contact and skin-to-skin contact, opening your shirt and snuggling baby against your bare chest. Every chance you get will tighten the bond, while, according to research, helping speed your newborn's brain development. In fact, every opportunity you take to be close to your baby increases your levels of the nurturing hormone oxytocin, which in turn increases those feelings of closeness. Yes, the relationship may seem a little one-sided at first. Until your newborn is alert enough to be responsive, you'll be doing all the smiling and cooing. But every moment of your attention is contributing to your baby's fledgling sense of well-being, letting your baby know he or she's secure, cared for, and loved unconditionally. The feedback you'll get once the smiles start coming will confirm that the connection with your baby was there all along. Has your spouse been mom monopolizing the baby and the baby care? Let her know that you'd like in. If she tends to baby hog when you're both at home, moms often do this without even realizing it, send her out, or at least out of the room. That way, she can get some alone time, and you can get the alone with baby time that will quickly bring you even closer.
Recovery from a cesarean delivery.
What will the recovery from my C-section delivery be like?
Recovery from a C-section is similar to recovery from any abdominal surgery, with a delightful difference. Instead of losing a gallbladder or an appendix, you gain a brand new baby. Of course, there's another less delightful difference. In addition to recovering from surgery, you'll also be recovering from childbirth. Except for a neatly intact perineum, you'll experience all the same postpartum discomforts over the next weeks, lucky you, that you would have if you delivered vaginally. After pains, lochia, perineal discomfort if you went through labor before the surgery, breast engorgement, fatigue, hormonal changes, and excessive perspiration, to name a few. Here's what you can expect in the recovery room. Pain around your incision. Once the anesthesia wears off, your incision wound, like any wound, is going to hurt, though just how much depends on many factors, including your personal pain threshold and how many cesarean deliveries you've had. The first is usually the most uncomfortable. You will probably be given pain relief medication as needed, which may make you feel woozy or drugged. It will also allow you to get some much-needed sleep. No stress if you're nursing. The medication won't pass into your colostrum, and by the time your milk comes in, you probably won't need any heavy painkillers. Though if you do, the small amount of medication that gets into your milk won't be unsafe for baby. If the pain continues for weeks, as it sometimes does, you can also safely rely on over-the-counter pain relief, like ibuprofen, Advil, or Motrin. Just ask your practitioner about dosing. If you'd like to avoid narcotic meds from the start, discuss pain relief options with your practitioner ahead of time and make sure that anyone administering medication is aware of your preference. Possible nausea, with or without vomiting. This isn't always an after effect of the surgery, but if it is, ask about getting an anti-nausea medication. Exhaustion. You're likely to feel somewhat weak after surgery, partly due to the blood loss, partly due to the anesthetic, and partly due to pain meds you might be taking. If you went through some hours of labor before the surgery, you'll feel even more beat. You might also feel emotionally spent. After all, you did just have a baby and surgery, especially if the C-section wasn't planned. Regular evaluations of your condition. A nurse will periodically check your vital signs, temperature, blood pressure, pulse, respiration, your urinary output and vaginal bleeding, the dressing on your incision, and the firmness and level of your uterus as it shrinks in size and makes its way back into the pelvis. Once you've been moved to your postpartum room, you can expect more checking. A nurse will continue to monitor your condition. Removal of the urinary catheter. This will probably take place several hours after surgery. Urination may be difficult. If they don't work, the catheter may be reinserted until you're able to pee by yourself. Encouragement to move. Before you're able to get out of bed, you'll be encouraged to wiggle your toes, circle your ankles, flex your feet to stretch your calf muscles, push against the end of the bed with your feet, and turn from side to side. These moves will improve circulation, especially in your legs, and prevent blood clots. Plus, they'll also help you get rid of all that IV accumulated fluid faster. But be prepared for some of them to be quite uncomfortable, at least for the first 24 hours or so. You can also resume your Kegels right after delivery, to get up between 8 and 24 hours after surgery. With the help of a nurse, you'll sit up first, supported by the raised head of the bed. Then, using your hands for support, you'll slide your legs over the side of the bed and dangle them for a few minutes. Then, slowly, you'll be helped to step down onto the floor, your hands still on the bed. If you feel dizzy, which is normal, sit right back down. Steady yourself for a few more minutes before taking a couple of steps, and then take them slowly. Walking may be very uncomfortable. Though you may need help the first few times you get up, this difficulty getting around is temporary. In fact, you may soon find yourself more mobile than the vaginally delivered mom next door, and you'll probably have the edge when it comes to sitting. A slow return to a normal diet. Research has shown that moms who start back on solids beginning as early as 4 to 8 hours post-op have that first bowel movement earlier and are usually ready to be released from the hospital 24 hours sooner than those kept on fluids only. Procedures may vary from hospital to hospital and from physician to physician, and your condition after the surgery may also play a part in deciding when to pull the plug on the IV and when to pull out the silverware. Keep in mind, too, that reintroduction of solids will come in stages. You'll start with fluids by mouth, moving on next to something soft and easily tolerated like Jell-O, and on slowly from there. Don't even think about having someone smuggle in a burger and fries yet. Once you're back on solids, don't forget to push the fluids too, especially if you're breastfeeding. Shoulder pain. Irritation of the diaphragm can cause a few hours of sharp shoulder pain after surgery, thanks to nerve pathways that run from the diaphragm to your shoulder, referring pain there. A pain reliever may help. Probably constipation. Since the anesthesia and the surgery, plus your limited diet and any pain meds you might be taking, may slow your bowels down, it may be a few days until you pass that first poop, and that's normal. You may also experience some painful gassiness because of the constipation. A stool softener, suppository, or other mild laxative may be prescribed to help move things along, especially if you're uncomfortable. Gas pain. As your digestive tract, temporarily put out of commission by surgery, begins to function again, trapped gas can cause considerable pain, especially when it presses against your incision line. The discomfort may be worse when you laugh, cough, or sneeze. Ask the nurse or doctor to suggest some possible remedies. A suppository may help release the gas. Taking a hallway stroll can also help, as can lying on your side or on your back, your knees drawn up. Taking deep breaths while holding the incision. Holding a pillow against the incision site when you change positions or poop, and after discharge when you ride in a car, can also help. Need more help? A belly band like the one you may have used during pregnancy can help support the belly and protect your incision. Swelling. Thought the days of swelling were over now that you're postpartum? They will be, eventually. But in the first week after a C-section, many moms notice increased swelling, particularly in their feet and legs. Some of this swelling comes from leftover pregnancy fluids. Some comes from all the IV fluids that were pumped in during surgery. Compounding post-op puffiness is the fact that you're not moving around much, which makes it harder for your body to rid itself of the fluid. Flush it out by drinking lots of water, getting moving as much as possible without overdoing it, and when you're in bed, keeping your legs elevated. If swelling is severe, especially above and below the knee, or is accompanied by other mentioned warning signs of postpartum complications, call your practitioner right away. To spend time with your baby. You'll be encouraged to cuddle and feed your baby as soon as possible. And yes, you can even lift your baby. Hospital regulations and your condition permitting, you'll probably be rooming in. And of course, having your partner or another family member or friend bunking with you too will be a big help. If you don't have that help on board, don't hesitate to call the nurse who can lend a hand. Removal of stitches. If your stitches or staples aren't self-absorbing, they will be removed about 4 or 5 days after delivery. The procedure isn't very painful, although you may have some discomfort. When the dressing is off, take a good look at the incision with the nurse or doctor. Once your incision is truly healing, no scabbing or open skin, usually 10 to 14 days after surgery, you can put a silicone scar sheet on it. You can pick up a package of them at your local pharmacy to help minimize the scar's appearance. Ask how soon you can expect the area to heal, which changes will be normal, and which might require medical attention. You'll likely be able to go home about 2 to 4 days postpartum, but you'll still have to take it easy, and you'll continue to need lots of help while you recover.
Give it time. So you've been a mom for a week, with the stretch marks, postpartum pains, and bags under your eyes to prove it. And by now, you may be wondering, when am I going to feel like one? When will I be able to accomplish latch on without 20 minutes of fumbling, or finally get the hang of burping, or stop worrying about breaking the baby every time I pick her up? When will I be able to coo without feeling awkward? When will I figure out which cries mean what, and how do I respond to any of them? How do I put on a diaper so it doesn't leak? Get the onesie over baby's head without a struggle? Shampoo that little patch of hair without dripping soap into those tender eyes? When will the job that nature just signed me up for start coming naturally? The truth is, giving birth makes you a mother. but it doesn't necessarily make you feel like one. Only time spent on this sometimes bewildering, sometimes overwhelming, always amazing job will do that. The day-to-day and night-to-night of parenting is never easy, but it absolutely, positively gets easier. So cut yourself some slack, pat yourself on the back, and give yourself time, Mom. Which, by the way, you are. Rooming in rules. Wondering where all the babies at your local hospital went? You know, the neatly wrapped bundles that used to be on display in the nursery, in row after row of bassinets? They're rooming in with their moms, most likely. Full-time rooming in has become the standard in family-centered maternity care, and for a lot of very sound reasons. It gives new parents, often both parents, since dads are typically welcome to room in too, the chance to start getting to know their new arrival right from the start, to spend time snuggling skin to skin, to become familiar with baby's hunger cues, to start practicing those soothing techniques they'll definitely need once they arrive home. It also makes it possible for new moms to breastfeed on demand, which boosts the odds of ultimate breastfeeding success. It even reduces the amount of crying and increases the amount of sleeping newborns do, and their moms, believe it or not. Rooming in is considered so beneficial, in fact, that even NICU families are encouraged to bunk with their babies in a hospital room for a night or two, albeit with a nurse just a call button away, before heading home. For all those reasons and more, hospital nurseries often don't have many, if any, baby boarders at any given time these days, typically taking in only newborns in need of some extra care. Some hospitals have even shut down their nurseries entirely, sending babies needing medical attention to the NICU instead. So do new moms have a choice when it comes to rooming in? At many hospitals, they don't. Rooming in has become a requirement, and when it's not mandatory, it's highly suggested. And that's just fine with most moms and dads, who are often just as happy not to let their brand new little ones out of their sight. But sometimes, rooming in moms need a break, an hour or two of uninterrupted sleep, or just a chance to rest up from childbirth and get ready for child rearing. If that sounds like you, push that button now and ask for a break. You've earned it, you deserve it, and hopefully you'll get it. Just make sure that if you're breastfeeding, your baby isn't given any supplementary bottles while you rest.
Coming home with baby.
In the hospital, a nurse was always a call button away when I needed help with the baby. Now that I'm home with him, I'm clueless how to care for him, and I'm feeling overwhelmed.
It's true that babies aren't born with how-tos written on their cute, dimply bottoms. Wouldn't that be convenient? Fortunately, they do typically come home from the hospital with instructions from the staff about feeding, bathing, and changing diapers. Already lost those? Or maybe they ended up smeared with mustardy poop the first time you tried to change baby's diaper while trying to read the instructions for changing his diaper? Not to worry. There's lots of help out there as you tackle your new job as a new parent, including what to expect the first year. Plus, you've probably already scheduled the first visit to the pediatrician, where you'll be armed with even more information, not to mention answers to the dozens of questions you've managed to accumulate. That is, if you remember to write them down and bring them along. Or maybe your health insurance plan entitles you to a visit from a home nurse who can troubleshoot problems you're having and offer some hands-on help. Of course, it takes more than know-how to make a parenting expert out of a new parent. It takes patience, perseverance, and practice, practice, practice. Luckily, your baby won't judge you as you learn. He won't care if you put his diaper on backward or you forget to wash behind his ears at bath time. What's more, he won't be shy about giving you feedback. He'll let you know when he's hungry or tired or wet, though at first you may have trouble telling which complaint is which. Best of all, since your baby's never had another mom or dad to compare you with, you definitely stack up really well in his book. In fact, you're the best he's ever had. Still suffering from a crumbling of confidence? What might help most, besides the passing of time and the accumulation of experience, is to know that you're in good company. All parents, even those seasoned pros you doubtless eye with envy, feel in over their heads in those early weeks, especially when postpartum exhaustion, teamed with nightly sleep deprivation and the recovery from childbirth, is taking its toll, body and soul. So cut yourself plenty of slack and give yourself plenty of time to adjust and to get with the parenting program. Pretty soon, sooner than you'd think, the everyday challenges of baby care won't be so challenging anymore. In fact, they'll come so naturally, you'll be able to do them in your sleep and will often feel as though you are. You'll be diapering, feeding, burping, and soothing with the best of them, with one arm tied behind your back, or at least one arm folding laundry, catching up on social media, reading a book, spooning cereal into your mouth, or otherwise multitasking. You'll be a mom, and moms, in case you haven't heard, can do anything.
For dads, being there. The very best way to start off your new life as a father is at home with your new family. So if it's possible and financially feasible, consider taking off as much time as you can right after delivery. Through the FMLA, which allows for 12 weeks of unpaid leave for mothers and fathers, or the policy at your company, or by taking a chunk of vacation time. If that's impossible, or not your preference, consider working part-time for a few weeks or doing some work from home. If none of these possibilities are practical, maximize the time you do have off from work. Make sure you're home as much as you can be, and learn to say no to overtime, early or late meetings, and business trips that can be put off or passed off. Especially in the postpartum period, when your partner is still recovering from labor and delivery, try to do more than your share of household chores and baby care whenever you're home. Keep in mind that no matter how physically or emotionally stressful your work is, there is no more demanding job than caring for a newborn. Make bonding with your new baby a priority, but don't forget to devote some time to nurturing the new mom in your life as well. Pamper her when you're home, and let her know you're thinking of her when you're at work. Call her often to offer support, and so she can unload as much as she needs to. And surprise her with flowers or with takeout from a favorite restaurant.
All about beginning breastfeeding.
There's nothing more natural than nursing a baby, right? Well, not always, at least not right away. Babies are born to breastfeed, but they're not necessarily born knowing how to breastfeed. Ditto for moms. The breasts are standard issue and fill with milk pretty much automatically. But knowing how to position them effectively in baby's mouth, well, that's a learned art. Truth is, while breastfeeding is a natural process, it's a natural process that doesn't necessarily come naturally or quickly to all moms and babies. Sometimes there are physical factors that foil those first few attempts. At other times, it's just a simple lack of experience on the part of both participants. But whatever might be keeping your baby and your breasts apart, it likely won't be long before they're in perfect sync. Some of the most mutually satisfying breast-baby relationships begin with several days or even weeks of fumbling, bungled efforts, and tears on both sides. Reading up on breastfeeding or even taking a class ahead of baby's arrival can help speed that mutual adjustment. But there's no substitute for learning on the job, baby at the breast. The following basics are meant to get you started on that job, but you'll find much more detailed help, including strategies for overcoming just about every breastfeeding bump you might encounter along the way, in what to expect the first year. Getting started breastfeeding. Here's how you can get off to a good breastfeeding start. Start early. Babies are extra alert in the first hour after birth, which makes this a perfect time for early bonding and early breastfeeding. So let your practitioner know that you'd like to begin breastfeeding right after delivery, even if it's a cesarean delivery, assuming baby doesn't need any immediate medical attention. Enlist help. Ask if a lactation consultant, LC, or a nurse who is knowledgeable about breastfeeding can observe your technique, provide hands-on instruction, and redirect if you and your baby aren't on target. If you leave the hospital or birthing center before getting the help you need, or if you need help once you're home, Find an outside LC or home nurse who can evaluate your technique and give you pointers. Contact your local La Leche League chapter, search for it at LLLI.org, or the International Lactation Consultant Association, ILCA, at ILCA.org for an LC in your area. Some pediatricians have licensed LCs or very experienced nurses on staff as well. Ask if your baby's doctor does. Keep your baby bottle-free. Even if you're planning to introduce a bottle at some point in your baby's breastfeeding future, hold off for now and make sure hospital staff does too, unless supplementary feedings are medically necessary. Bottle feedings of glucose water or formula can sabotage early breastfeeding efforts by satisfying your newborn's tender appetite and urge to suck. And since an artificial nipple yields results with less effort, you may find your baby reluctant to tackle your harder-to-work nipples after a few encounters with a bottle. Worse still, if baby's getting that sucking satisfaction elsewhere, your breasts won't be stimulated to produce enough milk, and a vicious cycle can begin, one that interferes with establishment of a good demand and supply system. Once you get home, stay bottle-free, even if you'll ultimately be supplementing, until breastfeeding is well-established, usually at 2 to 3 weeks. Feed around the clock. Aim for a feeding every 2 to 3 hours time from the beginning of one to the beginning of the next, for a total of 8 to 12 feeds a day. Not only will this round-the-clock schedule keep your baby happy, newborns love to suck even when they're not hungry, but it will stimulate your breasts, minimize engorgement, and boost production. Have a sleepy head on your hands? If it's been more than 2 to 3 hours since the last feed, it's time for a wake-up call. Unswaddle your baby or lay him or her on your bare chest. The scent of your breast may be enough to wake your little one. Get calm, Mom. Tension not only inhibits letdown, how your breast dispense milk once it's on tap, but it can generate stress in your baby. Infants are extremely sensitive to mom's moods, and a stressed-out baby can't nurse effectively. So try to start out each feed as relaxed as possible. Do some relaxation exercises before you begin, or tune into some soft, soothing music. Getting comfortable will also help you get your calm on, so use a nursing pillow or a regular pillow to position baby so breastfeeding's not a strain or a pain. Bring on baby's calm before feeds too, by doing some gentle rocking and quiet, soothing skin-to-skin.
Eating when you're feeding. Milk production burns 500 calories a day, which means that you'll get to eat an extra 500 calories a day, up from your pre-pregnancy numbers, not your pregnancy allotment, to meet that need. As baby gets bigger and hungrier, you may have to add even more calories. That is, until solids are added to the menu and the demand for breast milk gradually decreases. You'll also need an extra serving of calcium for a total of 5. Feeding time. Remember how you timed your contractions, counting from the beginning of one to the beginning of the next? Good, because you'll be timing breastfeeding sessions the same way. These sessions won't be nearly as close together as contractions were, but they will last a whole lot longer, leaving you less time between feeds than you might have expected. Still, as time-consuming as breastfeeding can be at first, it's important not to put a time limit on it. A newborn nursing session lasts an average of 30 minutes. But some sweet slow pokes can linger for as long as 45 minutes. Don't put a time limit on how long baby spends at each breast either, because you're worried about your nipples getting sore. Sore nipples result from improper positioning of baby on the breast and have little to do with the length of the feeding. Instead, let your baby be your guide. As you'll soon discover, your just-born newborn is wise beyond his or her days in many ways. Feeding is one of those. He or she will likely tell you when it's time to switch sides, by slowing down or stopping suckling, and when it's time to call it quits on the session entirely, by conking out. The exception? If baby nods off after just a few minutes of suckling, it's time for a wake-up call. Some sleepyheads would rather snooze than suckle. Once your milk comes in and engorgement levels off, you'll want to make sure that at least one breast is emptied. It'll go from feeling full to feeling soft at each feeding. Thoroughly draining one side before moving on to the next will ensure that your little nurser gets not only the thirst-quenching foremilk that a breast dispenses at the beginning of a feed, but the high-calorie hind milk that comes at the end. So don't pull the plug arbitrarily mid-feed. Once baby is finished with the first breast, you can offer the second, but don't push it. Just remember to start the next feeding on the breast that wasn't drained at the last session. So sleepy yourself, you're having trouble remembering which side is up next? Use a reminder, a notation in your breastfeeding journal or app, a small scrunchie looped around your bra strap, or a nursing bracelet on your wrist to remind you which breast is on deck for the next feed. And speaking of keeping track, it's a good idea to keep a running tab of baby's feeds, when they begin and end, as well as of wet and soiled diapers your newborn produces. While that might sound a bit obsessive, it'll help give you a good sense of how breastfeeding is going, and also make it possible for you to report back to baby's doctor at the next checkup. Along with good weight gain, adequate output, at least 6 wet diapers with urine that's clear, not dark, and at least 5 bowel movements over each 24-hour period, is one of the best indications of good intake, and a sign that your breasts and baby are right on target.
For dads, no breasts, no problem. It's a biological fact. There are 3 things that mom can do that dads can't. You can't be pregnant, you can't give birth, some would consider that a definite plus, and you can't breastfeed. But here's another fact. Those natural physical limitations don't have to send you to the sidelines. You can share in nearly all the excitement, joy, anticipation, and, let's face it, stress of your spouse's pregnancy, labor, and delivery from the first kick to the last push as an active, supportive participant. And though you'll never be able to put your baby to the breast, at least not with the kind of results baby is looking for, you can share in the feeding process. Be your baby's backup feeder. Once breastfeeding is established, there's more than one way to feed a baby. And though you can't breastfeed, you can be the one to give supplementary bottles of expressed milk or formula, if those will be on baby's menu. Not only will being the supplementary feeder give mom a break, whether in the middle of the night or in the middle of dinner, it will give you extra opportunities for closeness with your baby. Make the most of the moment. Instead of propping the bottle up to the baby's mouth, strike a nursing position with your baby snuggled close and the bottle where that breast would be. Opening up your shirt, which allows for cuddly skin-to-skin contact, will enhance the experience for both of you. No supplementary bottles on the menu? You can still do skin-to-skin every chance you get. Share in the night shift. Sharing in the joys of feeding also means sharing in those early weeks of sleepless nights. Even if you're not giving supplementary bottles, there's plenty you can do for team feed. You can be the one to pick baby up, do any necessary diaper changing, deliver baby to mom for feedings, and return baby to the crib or bassinet once the feed is finished. Not only will you be connecting more with baby by participating in nighttime feeds, building both lifelong bonds and lifetime memories, but you'll also be letting mom get some much-needed rest. Double down on other duties. Breastfeeding is the only baby care activity limited to moms. Dads can bathe, diaper, or rock with the best of moms. And yes, even better than them, given the chance to step up and step in.
Breastfeeding 101. Proper positioning is essential to a good latch and to prevent nipple soreness and other breastfeeding problems. Start by placing baby on his or her side, facing your nipple. Make sure baby's whole body is facing your breasts, with his or her ear, shoulder, and hip in a straight line. In other words, make sure baby's little boy or girl parts are facing, parallel to, the breasts you're not feeding from. You don't want your baby's head to be turned to the side. It should be straight in line with his or her body. Imagine how difficult it would be for you to drink and swallow while turning your head to the side. Use a nursing pillow or a regular pillow to bring baby up to a height that will make maneuvering your little one to the breast easier. You can try any of these positions, experimenting to find the ones that feel most comfortable for you. Crossover hold. Hold your baby's head with the hand opposite to the breast you'll be nursing from. If you're nursing on the right breast, hold your baby with your left hand. Rest your wrist between your baby's shoulder blades, with your thumb behind one ear, your other fingers behind the other ear. Using your other hand, cup your breast, placing your thumb above your nipple and areola at the spot where your baby's nose will touch your breast. Your index finger should be at the spot where your baby's chin will touch the breast. Lightly compress your breast so your nipple points slightly toward your baby's nose. You are now ready to have baby latch on. Football hold. This position, also called the clutch hold, is especially useful if you've had a C-section and want to avoid placing your baby against your abdomen, or if your breasts are large, or if your baby is small or preterm. Position your baby at your side, facing you, with baby's legs under your arm, your right arm if you're nursing on the right breast. Support your baby's head with your right hand and cup your breast as you would for the crossover hold. Cradle hold. Position your baby so that sweet little head rests in the bend of your elbow and you're using the rest of your arm to support baby's body. Using your free hand, cup your breast as you would for the crossover hold. Laid back position, also called biological nurturing. Lean back on a bed or couch, well supported by pillows, so that when you put your baby tummy to tummy onto your body, head near your breast, gravity will keep him or her molded to you. Your baby can rest on you in any direction as long as his or her whole front is against yours and he or she can reach your breast. Your baby can naturally latch on in this position, or you can help by directing the nipple toward his or her mouth. But otherwise, you don't have to do much in the laid-back position besides lie back and enjoy. Side-lying position. In this position, both you and your baby lie on your sides, tummy to tummy. Use your hand on the side you're not lying on to cup your breast if you need to. This position is a good choice when you're feeding in the middle of the night. Now that baby's in position, you can latch him or her onto your breast using the following tips. Gently tickle your baby's lips with your nipple until his or her mouth is opened very wide, like a yawn. Some LCs suggest aiming your nipple towards your baby's nose and then directing it down to the upper lip to get baby to open his or her mouth very wide. This prevents the lower lip from getting tucked in during nursing. If your baby turns his or her head away, gently stroke the cheek on the side nearest you. The rooting reflex will make baby turn his or her head toward your breast. Once that little mouth is opened wide, move your baby closer to not move your breast toward your baby. Many latching on problems occur because mom is hunched over baby, trying to shove breast into mouth. Instead, keep your back straight and bring your baby to your breast. Remember, too, not to stuff your nipple into an unwilling mouth. Instead, let your baby take the initiative. It may take a couple of attempts before your baby opens his or her mouth wide enough to latch on properly. Be sure baby latches onto both the nipple and the areola that surrounds it. Sucking on just the nipple won't compress the milk glands and can cause soreness and cracking. Once baby is properly latched on, check to see if your breast is blocking your baby's nose. If it is, lightly depress the breast with your finger. Elevating baby slightly may also help provide a little breathing room. But as you maneuver, be sure not to loosen baby's grip on the areola. Not sure if baby's suckling? Check those sweet cheeks. You should see a strong, steady, rhythmic motion. That means your little feeder is getting fed, successfully suckling and swallowing. If your baby has finished suckling but is still holding onto the breast, pulling it out abruptly can cause injury to your nipple. Instead, break the suction first by depressing the breast or by putting your finger into the corner of baby's mouth to let in some air.
Breastfeeding multiples. Breastfeeding, like just about every aspect of caring for newborn multiples, seems as though it will be at least twice as challenging. However, once you've fallen into the rhythm of nursing your multiples, and you will, you'll find that it's not only possible, but double or even triply rewarding and convenient. To successfully nurse twins and more, you should eat up. Doing so much feeding will mean you'll also have to do more eating. To fuel your multiples milk machine, you'll need 400 to 500 calories above your pre-pregnancy needs for each baby you're nursing. You may need to increase your caloric intake as the babies grow bigger and hungrier, or decrease it if you supplement nursing with formula and or solids, or if you have considerable fat reserves you would like to burn. You'll also need an extra calcium serving for that extra baby for a total of 6, though you can also tap into a calcium supplement to help you reach that goal. Pump it up. If your babies are in the NICU and are still too small to breastfeed, consider pumping. Nurse 2 at a time. You've got 2 breasts and 2 or more mouths to feed, so why not nurse them together, tandem style? An obvious and big advantage of tandem nursing is that you don't spend all day and night nursing. First baby A, now baby B, and back to baby A, and so on. To nurse 2 at the same time, position both babies on the pillow first, and then latch them on, or ask someone to hand the babies to you one at a time, especially while you're still getting used to the juggling act. Using a nursing pillow designed for twins will make positioning much easier. You can position both babies in the football or clutch hold, using nursing pillows to support their heads, or you can combine the cradle hold and the football hold, again using the pillow for support and experimenting until both you and your babies are comfortable. If tandem nursing doesn't appeal to you, don't do it. You can bottle feed one, using either pumped milk or formula, if you're supplementing, while nursing the other, and then switch off, or nurse one baby after the other. Got 3 or more babies to feed? Breastfeeding triplets and even quads is possible too. Nurse 2 at a time, and then nurse the 3rd baby afterward, remembering to switch off which baby gets solo suckling time. For more information on breastfeeding higher order multiples, check out raisingmultiples.org. Treat each diner differently. Even identical twins have different personalities, appetites, and nursing patterns. So try to tune in to the needs of each and keep extra careful records to make sure each baby is well fed at each feeding. Give both breasts a workout. Switch breasts for each baby at each feeding so both breasts are stimulated equally. Breastfeeding after a cesarean delivery. Eager to get your baby to breast, even though you've had a C-section? How soon you can get baby to latch on and get busy depends on how you're feeling and how baby's doing. More and more hospitals are allowing skin-to-skin and breast nuzzling time right after delivery, baby's condition permitting. And the most progressive hospitals are giving new moms the opportunity to breastfeed right after their C-section, while they're still in the operating room. Of course, you'll have a hard time moving. You just had major surgery after all. So be sure to enlist your partner, a nurse, your doula, or an LC to help you get propped up or shifted to your side and in position ready for baby to be handed to you. You'll probably find breastfeeding after a C-section uncomfortable at first, at least once your pain meds wear off. Your best bet will be to find a position that puts the least amount of pressure on your incision. Do this by placing a regular or breastfeeding pillow on your lap under the baby, or by lying on your side, or by using the football hold, again, supported by a pillow, to nurse. A belly band can also take some of the pressure off your incision, helping make breastfeeding a little more comfortable. Some positions will be more comfortable than others, so be sure to find the best one for you. If you're groggy from general anesthesia, or your baby needs immediate care in the nursery, this first nursing session may have to wait. If after 12 hours, you still haven't been able to get together with your baby, ask about using a pump to express colostrum and get lactation started. A few more things to keep in mind. First, since you've been pumped up with a lot of fluids thanks to your IV, your baby will have a little more water weight on him or her. Your little one will get rid of those fluids by peeing a lot and appearing to lose a lot of weight, more than a typical vaginal birth baby. Be sure that normal weight loss isn't used as a reason to give a supplementary bottle, unless it has been prescribed as medically necessary, since that could hurt your chances of early breastfeeding success. Second, some moms who have had cesarean delivery find that their milk comes in a little later than expected, probably due to the extra stress of surgery. You can keep your milk supply on track by cuddling skin to skin with your baby often and getting those first nursing sessions started as soon as possible. Be sure you've documented your wishes in your birth plan and that you've got advocates on your side, your partner, an LC, a doula, the pediatrician, helping you be reunited with your baby as soon as possible. Finally, you'll be given pain meds, often narcotics, after your delivery. Don't hesitate to take them if you need them and want them. Being in intense pain can unnecessarily interfere with your breastfeeding efforts. As long as you use them only short-term and at a safe dose, take only one tablet every 6 to 8 hours maximum, and watch for excessive drowsiness in baby, they're safe for your little one and compatible with breastfeeding. If you've been given antibiotics after your C-section, be aware that it might increase your newborn's chances of getting thrush. Taking a probiotic can help reduce that risk.
Breastfeeding the NICU baby. Breast is best for babies of every size, including the tiniest ones. In fact, preemies and babies who are small for gestational age or have other medical problems at birth do much better on breast milk, even if they're not ready to tackle a breast. So don't give up on breastfeeding. Talk to your baby's neonatologist and the nurse in charge to see how you can best feed your very little one and feed him or her the very best while in the NICU. And then if you can, get pumping. A double electric is best, and if you can rent a hospital-grade pump, better still. If baby isn't ready for latching on yet, your pumped milk may be given to your baby via tube feeding or bottle. Even if that's not possible at first, you can pump milk to store until baby's ready for it and to keep your supply pumped up until baby's ready to feed from you directly. Can't produce enough breast milk or can't pump at all? Ask the hospital about the possibility of donor milk, often used to supplement preemies.
Chapter 17. Postpartum. The first 6 weeks.
By now, you're probably either settling into your new life as a fledgling mom or figuring out how to juggle new baby care with the demands of older children. Almost certainly, much of your daily and nightly attention is focused on that recently arrived little bundle. Babies, after all, don't take care of themselves. But that doesn't mean you should neglect your own care. Yes, you need care too, especially while you're still in recovery mode. Though most of your questions and concerns are likely to be baby-related right now, you're sure to have some that are a little more mommy-centric too. From the state of your emotions, will I ever stop crying during those silly insurance commercials? To the state of your sexual union, will I ever want to do it again? To the state of your waist, will I ever be able to wear jeans that zip? The answers, yes, yes, and yes. Just give it time. If you'd like to see any of the illustrations from this chapter, you can download and print out a special PDF from the same Audible page where you purchase your audiobook.
What you may be feeling the first 6 weeks.
The first 6 weeks postpartum are considered a recovery period. Even if you sailed through your pregnancy and had the easiest labor and delivery on record, and especially if you didn't, your body has still been stretched and stressed to the max, and it needs a chance to regroup. Every new mom, like every expectant one, is different. So all will make that recovery at a different rate with a different collection of postpartum symptoms. Depending on the type of delivery you had, how much help you have at home, and a variety of other individual factors, you may experience all or only some of the following. Physically, continued lochia, first dark red, then pink, turning brownish, then yellowish white. Fatigue, of course. Some continuing pain and numbness in the perineum if you had a vaginal delivery, especially if you had stitches, or labored before having a cesarean delivery. Diminishing incision pain, continuing numbness if you had a C-section. Gradual easing of constipation and hopefully hemorrhoids. gradual slimming of your belly as excess fluids are flushed out and your uterus shrinks and recedes into your pelvis. Gradual weight loss. Gradual decrease in swelling. Breast discomfort and nipple soreness until breastfeeding is well established. Backache from weakened abdominal muscles and from carrying baby. Joint pain from joints still loosened from pregnancy. Achiness in arms and neck from carrying and feeding baby. Continued excessive sweating. Continued hot flashes. Hair loss. Emotionally, elation, moodiness, or swings between them. A sense of being overwhelmed, a growing feeling of confidence, or swings between the two. Little interest in sex, or less commonly, stepped-up desire.
Expect the unexpected postpartum. Like pregnancy, the postpartum period can deliver a bundle of unexpected symptoms. For one, phantom kicks. Occasionally feeling your baby kicking from the inside when, clearly, your baby is living on the outside. Or diaper rash, on you, not baby, from wearing pads for so long. You can switch brands, use Witch Hazel pads, or even borrow baby's diaper rash cream. Postpartum hives, which can erupt days, weeks, or even months after delivery, even among moms who have never had an allergic reaction in their lives. These hives seem to be associated either with breastfeeding hormones or a postpartum immune reaction. Ask your doctor for a treatment plan, which will probably include a breastfeeding-safe antihistamine. Another unexpected symptom that can affect breastfeeding moms postpartum, a fleeting feeling of sadness every time baby starts to suckle. Stumbled on another symptom you didn't expect now that you're no longer expecting? Check out this and the previous chapter. And if you still can't figure out the trigger, check with your practitioner. What you can expect at your postpartum checkup.
Your prenatal care might be over, but your fourth trimester care is just beginning. ACOG recommends that your first postpartum checkup or check-in should ideally happen within the first 3 weeks, followed by care as needed. Call if you notice any concerning symptoms, and then a final postpartum office visit no later than 12 weeks after birth. Why so many visits? Because the 3 months after delivery are, in many ways, as important for your well-being and your baby's as the 9 months of pregnancy. During your visits, expect the following to be checked. Blood pressure. Weight, which may be down by about 17 to 20 pounds. Your uterus, to see if it has returned to pre-pregnant shape, size, and location. Your cervix, which will be on its way back to its pre-pregnant state, but will still be somewhat engorged. Your vagina, which will have contracted and regained much of its muscle tone. Any tear or episiotomy repair site. Your incision site, if you had a cesarean delivery. Your breasts to check for lumps, redness, tenderness, cracked nipples, or any abnormal discharge. Hemorrhoids or varicose veins, if you have either. Your emotional state. Screening for PPD, postpartum depression. Questions or problems you want to discuss, have a list ready. At this visit, your practitioner will also discuss with you the method of birth control you're planning to use.
What you may be wondering about, the first 6 weeks.
Exhaustion.
I knew I'd be tired after giving birth, but I haven't gotten any sleep in weeks. And I'm so beyond exhausted, it's not funny.
No one's laughing, especially none of the other sleep-deprived new parents out there. And no one's really wondering why you're so exhausted either. After all, you're juggling endless feeding, especially for breastfeeding, burping, changing, rocking, and pacing. You're trying to tackle the mountain of growing laundry that seems to grow larger and more daunting each day, and the pile of thank you notes that never seem to get written. You're shopping out of diapers again, and you're slapping. Who knew how much baby stuff you need to lug just to pick up milk at the supermarket? And you're doing it all on an average of about 3 hours of sleep, if you're lucky, a night, with a body that's still recovering from childbirth. In other words, you have multiple good reasons why you're feeling like Our Lady of Perpetual Exhaustion. Is there a cure for this maternal fatigue syndrome? Not really, at least not until baby starts sleeping through the night. But in the meantime, there are many ways of regaining some of your get up and go, or at least enough so you can keep getting up and going. Get some help. Hire help if you can afford to. A postpartum doula might be just the ticket. If you can't, now's a good time to let family and friends lend their helping hands. Enlist them to take baby out for a stroll while you grab a power nap, or suggest that they pick up your groceries. Share the load. Parenting when there are two parents around is a two-person job. Even if your partner in parenting is holding down a 9-to-5, he should share the baby load when he's home. Ditto the cleaning, laundry, cooking, and shopping. Together, divide and conquer the responsibilities. Then write down who's on for what and when so there's no confusion. If you're a single parent or your partner's deployed, lean on a close friend or family member to help out. Don't sweat the small stuff. The only small stuff that matters right now is your baby. Everything else should take a distant backseat until you're feeling more energetic. So let the dust bunnies breed where they may, even if it's on top of those still blank thank you notes. And while you're ignoring those thank you notes, buy some time by sending out a bulk email with baby's picture attached. Find deliverance. Whether it's the hot meal you never have time to cook, or the baby nail clippers you forgot to buy, or the diapers you're forever running out of, there's an app for everything you need delivered to your door, except for a nap. So load up your phone and get busy. Sleep when the baby sleeps. Yes, you've heard it before, and you've probably snorted at the thought. After all, baby's nap time is the only time you can tackle the 300 other things that never seem to get done. But stop snorting and start snoring. Lie down for even 15 minutes during one of the baby's daytime naps, and you'll feel better able to handle the crying when it starts again. Feed your baby, feed yourself. Sure, you're busy feeding baby, but don't forget to feed yourself too. Just as you did when you were expecting, fight fatigue by grazing on mini meals that combine protein and complex carbs to serve up long-term energy. Keep your fridge, your glove compartment, and your diaper bag stocked with grab-and-go snacks so you're never running on empty. While sugar and caffeine, that giant cupcake and that five-shot latte, taken in quick succession, may seem the obvious solution for the energy challenge, remember this. Though they may give you the boost you crave in the short term, they'll quickly lead to an energy crash and burn. And don't just eat, drink plenty of water too, because dehydration can lead to exhaustion. If you're really beat, check with your practitioner to rule out any other physical cause, such as postpartum thyroiditis. If you're feeling a little down, take steps to boost your mood, because baby blues are tied to fatigue as well. If all else checks out and it's diagnosis new mommy, rest assured, that is when you can rest at all, that your zombie days are numbered. You will live to sleep again. Hair loss.
My hair seems to be falling out suddenly. Am I going bald?
You're not going bald. You're just going back to normal. Ordinarily, the average head sheds 100 hairs a day. Just not all at once, so you don't usually notice the shedding. And those hairs are being continually replaced. During pregnancy, however, hormonal changes keep those hairs from falling out, which means your head hangs on to them. But all good things must come to an end, including your reprieve on hair fall. All those hairs that were slated to go during pregnancy will be shed sometime after delivery, usually in the first 6 months postpartum, and often in unsettling clumps. Some women who are breastfeeding exclusively find that hair fall doesn't begin in earnest until they wean their baby or supplement with formula or solids. You'll take comfort knowing by the time your baby is ready to blow out the candles on that first birthday cake and probably has a full head of hair of his or her own, your hair should be back to normal for you. To keep your hair healthy, continue taking your prenatal supplement or switch to a supplement designed for breastfeeding moms if you're nursing. Eat well and treat your mane humanely. That means shampooing only when necessary, as if you had any time for extra shampoos now. Using a wide-tooth comb or detangling brush if you have to untangle, not frying your hair with curling or flat irons, as if you have the time to style it anyway, and using soft scrunchies or gentle clips to put up your mom do. Talk to your practitioner if your hair loss seems really excessive, since that can be a symptom of postpartum thyroiditis. By the way, if you also had a reprieve from waxing and shaving during pregnancy, because hair stopped growing on your legs, under your arms, and other places you typically keep groomed, that party may be over. Unfortunately, hair will probably resume its growth in the places you'd prefer it didn't. However, if you had a fuzzy belly or extra facial hair throughout your pregnancy, you'll likely be shedding that soon, thankfully. Postpartum urinary incontinence.
I gave birth nearly 2 months ago, and I'm still peeing when I cough or laugh. Am I ever going to stop leaking?
So your new mom bladder is letting you and your panties down? It's completely normal to involuntarily leak a little urine in the months, yes, months, after delivery, usually while laughing, sneezing, coughing, or performing any strenuous activity. And it's pretty common. More than a third of moms spring a postpartum leak. That's because pregnancy, labor, and delivery weaken the muscles around the bladder and pelvis, making it harder for you to control the flow of urine. Plus, as your uterus shrinks in the weeks after delivery, it sits directly on the bladder, compressing it and making it more difficult to stem the tide. Hormonal changes after pregnancy can also batter your bladder. It can take between 3 and 6 months or even longer to regain complete bladder control. Until then, use panty liners, maxi pads, or bladder control pads to absorb the leak, depending on how much you're leaking. You can also take these steps to help regain control faster. Keep up your Kegels. Thought you were finished with your Kegels now that your baby's delivered? You'll actually need them more than ever to speed your recovery. Among other perks, continuing those pelvic floor strengthening exercises will help you regain bladder control now and preserve it later on in life. Start losing it. Extra pounds gained during pregnancy are still applying pressure to your bladder. Once you've reached the 6-week mark, start shedding weight sensibly to take that pressure off. Train your bladder to behave. Pee every 30 minutes before you have the urge, and then try to extend the time between pees, going, without going, a few more minutes each day. Stay regular. Try to avoid constipation, so full bowels don't put pressure on your bladder. Drink up. It might seem that cutting back on fluids would cut down on the leaking, but dehydration makes you vulnerable to UTIs. An infected bladder is much more likely to leak, and a leaking bladder is more likely to become infected. When reaching for the fluids, however, consider limiting caffeine, since too much can irritate the urinary tract. Tired of pulling out pads to absorb all those leaks, or not crazy about graduating to the bladder leak variety? Another option once you've completely finished your postpartum healing, check with your practitioner first, a bladder support product, a specially designed tampon-like product that's inserted vaginally to gently lift and support the urethra to prevent leaks. Don't use real tampons. Leak won't let up?
Help for leaks that won't let up. Tried every do-it-yourself trick for dealing with postpartum urinary or fecal incontinence, including Kegeling until you're blue in the face, but still left with a leak? Don't let embarrassment keep you from talking to your practitioner. He or she might suggest biofeedback, other treatments, such as physical therapy, or in a particularly tough case, eventual surgery. Fortunately, leaks usually resolve themselves without that kind of intervention.
Fecal incontinence.
I've been passing gas involuntarily lately and even leaking some feces, which is gross. What can I do about it?
As a new mother, you definitely expected to be cleaning up after your baby, but you probably didn't count on cleaning up after yourself. Yet some newly delivered moms do add fecal incontinence and the involuntary passing of gas to that long list of unpleasant postpartum symptoms. That's because during labor and childbirth, the muscles and nerves in the pelvic area are stretched and sometimes damaged, which can make it difficult for you to control how and when waste and wind leaves your body. In most cases, the problem takes care of itself as the muscles and nerves recover, usually within a few weeks. Until then, skip hard-to-digest foods. Nothing fried, no beans, no cabbage. And avoid overeating or eating on the run. The more air you gulp, the more you are likely to pass it as gas. Keeping up with your Kegels can also help tighten up those slack muscles, as well as the ones that control urine, which also may be leaking these days. Check in with your practitioner about it too. If fecal leaking continues, you may want to ask for a referral to a physical therapist for pelvic floor therapy. Postpartum backache.
I thought all my back pain would go away after delivery, but it hasn't. Why?
Welcome back, backache. If you're like nearly half of all newly delivered moms, your old, not-so-friendly pal from pregnancy has returned for an unwelcome visit. Some of the pain still has the same cause, hormonally loosened ligaments that haven't yet tightened up. It may take time and several weeks of soreness before those ligaments regain their strength. Ditto for the stretched out and weakened abdominal muscles that altered your posture during pregnancy, putting strain on your back. And of course, now that you've got a baby around, there's another reason for that pain in your back. All the lifting, bending, rocking, feeding, and toting you're doing, especially as that cute little load you're carrying around gets bigger and heavier, your back will be up against growing stress and strain. One thing you can't blame your backache on, an epidural. Research shows that lingering back pain beyond the first postpartum days isn't related to having had an epidural. While time heals most things, including those postpartum aches and pains, there are other ways to get your back on track. Tone that tummy. Ease into some undemanding exercises to strengthen the muscles that support your back. Get support. Use a belly binder, belt, band, or compression shorts to help support your abdominal muscles, easing back pain. Mend when you bend and lift. Give your back a break by bending properly. Spread your feet apart to give yourself a wide base of support. Bend at your knees, not your waist. Tighten your core as you lift or lower. Lift using your leg muscles and hold the object as close to your body as you can. If an object is too heavy or awkward, don't lift it. Get off your feet. Sure, you're running and rocking all the time, but whenever you don't have to, take a seat. When you have to stand, place one foot on a low stool to take some of the pressure off your back. Put your feet up. Who deserves to put their feet up more than you? Plus, elevating your feet slightly when sitting and baby feeding will ease the strain on your back. Don't be a slouch on the couch. When feeding your baby, don't slump over, as tempting as that might be, given your state of exhaustion. Your back will thank you if it's well supported. Watch your posture, listen to your mom, and stand up straight, even when you're swaying from side to side. Slouched shoulders result in an aching back. As your baby gets bigger, avoid resting that growing weight on one hip, which will throw your back off further, plus lead to hip pain. Wear your baby. Instead of always holding your baby, wear him or her in a sling or wrap. Not only will it be soothing to baby and you, but it'll be a relief to your achy back and arms. Pull a switch. Many moms play favorites with their arms, always carrying or feeding baby in the left arm or the right. Instead, alternate arms so they each get a workout and you don't get a lopsided ache. Rub it. Can't spare the time and change for the professional massage your muscles are aching for? Ask your spouse to step in and rub. Turn up the heat. A heating pad can spell relief from back pain and muscle aches. Apply it often, especially during those marathon feeding sessions. Ask your practitioner or the baby's pediatrician whether it's okay to use topical creams or heat patches if you're breastfeeding. You'll probably get the green light, but it's a good idea to ask, just to be on the safe side. As your body adjusts to toting a baby all the time, you'll probably find that pain in your back and arms and hips and neck diminishing, and you may even find yourself sporting some new baby biceps. In the meantime, here's something else that might help ease your aches by easing your load. Unload that diaper bag. Lug around only what you absolutely need, which is plenty heavy anyway. Baby blues.
I was sure I'd be over the moon once my baby was born. But I'm feeling down instead. What's going on?
How can something so happy make you feel so sad? That's what an estimated 60 to 80% of new moms end up asking themselves soon after childbirth, thanks to so-called baby blues. Baby blues appear seemingly out of the blue, usually 3 to 5 days after delivery, but sometimes a little earlier or a little later, bringing on unexpected sadness and irritability, bouts of crying, restlessness, and anxiety. Unexpected because, well, for one thing, isn't having a baby supposed to make you over the moon, not down in the dumps? It's actually easy to understand why you're feeling this way if you step back for a moment and take an objective look at what's been going on in your life, your body, and your psyche, including any or all of the following. Rapid changes in hormone levels, which drop precipitously after childbirth, and a draining delivery followed by an exhausting homecoming, all compounded by the round-the-clock demands of newborn care, sleep deprivation, possible feelings of new mommy self-doubt, breastfeeding stumbling blocks, sore nipples, painful engorgement, unhappiness over your looks, the bags under your eyes, the pooch around your belly, the fact that there are more dimples on your thighs than on your baby's, and stress from inevitably shifting relationship dynamics. With such an overwhelming laundry list of challenges to confront, and don't even get you started on the laundry that's on that list, it's no wonder you're feeling down. The baby blues will likely fade over the next couple of weeks as you adjust to your new life and start getting a little more rest, or more realistically, begin functioning more effectively on less rest. In the meantime, try the following tips to help lift yourself out of that postpartum slump. Lower the bar. Feeling overwhelmed and underprepared in your role as a newbie mom, it may help to remember that you won't be for long. After just a few weeks on the job, you're likely to feel much more comfortable in those new mom's shoes. In the meantime, lower your expectations for yourself and for your baby. Then lower them some more. Make this your mommy or daddy mantra, even after you've become a parenting pro. There's no such thing as a perfect parent. Expecting too much means you'll be letting yourself down and bringing your mood down too. Instead, just do the best you can, which at this point may not be as well as you'd like, but that's okay. Don't go it alone. Nothing is more depressing than being left alone with a crying newborn, that mountain of spit-up stained laundry, a leaning tower of dirty dishes, and the promise, make that the guarantee, of another sleep-deprived night ahead. So if it's feasible, ask for more help from your partner, your mother, your sister, your friends. Dress yourself. Yes, you're busy dressing and diapering your baby, but have you forgotten to dress yourself? It sounds trite, but it's surprisingly true. Spending a little time making yourself look good will actually help you feel